Visit them online at hawaiipractice.com. Learn more about ThinkTech Hawaii and its mission at thinktechhawaii.com. And tune in tomorrow for ThinkTech Radio's Art and Culture Thursday.
Hawaii's Business Authority, KGU, Honolulu.
Part of the Wall Street Business Network.
Covering the financial and business news you need to know.
With Ezra News, I'm Patrick Foss. Two senior Justice Department officials are leaving their jobs in the wake of the inspector's report on Operation Fast and Furious.
The gun trafficking probe resulted in hundreds of weapons turning up at crime scenes in the U.S. and Mexico, and the Justice Department has been faulted by the Inspector General. Once the report was released, the former acting director of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives retired, and a deputy assistant attorney general resigned. The report said lower-level officials should have briefed Attorney General Eric Holder much earlier. Greg Clugston at the White House.
Also on SRNews.com, in a Meet the Candidate forum in Coral Gables, Florida, GOP presidential nominee Mitt Romney says President Obama has failed to deliver on promises of immigration reform.
He never even filed a bill. He never tried to fix the immigration system. So it's time to put the politics aside, and I will actually reform our immigration system to make it work for the people of America.
That audio courtesy of Univision News. Schools are open again today in Chicago after teachers decided to end the strike. Chicago's second grader, Grant Powell, was asked how he felt when he heard the teacher strike was over.
I felt happy because I really wanted to see my friends again.
Teachers still have to vote on the contract. Lawmakers united by their respective Myanmar democracy leader Aung San Suu Kyi on Wednesday presented her with Congress's highest civilian honor. In a ceremony at the Capitol Rotunda ahead of a meeting with President Obama, the Myanmar democracy leader thanked members of Congress for the gold medal.
From the depths of my heart, I thank you, the people of America, and you, their representatives, for keeping us in your hearts and minds during the dark years when freedom and justice seemed beyond our reach.
Aung San Suu Kyi described receiving the Congressional Gold Medal as one of the most moving days of my life. This is Ezra News.
Policy issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit AIGdirect.com.
If you died tomorrow, would your family have enough to pay the bills? Or could they lose their house, savings, and dreams of a good education? You don't have to put them through that. Getting term life insurance to provide for your family is fast, easy, and amazingly affordable. A five-minute call to AIG Direct could save you up to 70%. Just listen to this. Less than $17 a month gets you a $250,000 policy. Now is a great time to get term life because some prices have dropped to their lowest rates ever. And AIG Direct has partnered with American General Life to bring you their lowest rates on term life insurance. Find out how incredibly affordable term life is through AIG Direct. Call now for a free, no-obligation quote. The call takes just a few minutes, and through AIG Direct, you could save up to 70%. Call 1-800-425-0474. That's 1-800-425-0474. 1-800-425-0474.
Talk about experience. For nearly 30 years, DHX, Dependable Hawaiian Express, has successfully handled transportation services to and from Hawaii. Our employees know all the ropes. We're dedicated people working with a sense of urgency and care. We operate our own trucks in Honolulu, Maui, the Big Island, American Samoa, and Guam, so you can be confident of on-time, safe, and seamless ocean and air freight service. Next time, call the experienced people at DHX, Dependable Hawaiian Express, and relax. We're dependable from start to finish.
This week, Acura of Honolulu and Automart USA proudly announced the salute to our military, an exciting event to welcome home our returning service members and thank all of our active duty retired military and their families for their service and sacrifice. Visit our stores and receive the special treatment you deserve, a $500 accessories allowance to dress up your new Acura with finance rates as low as 0.9% APR, or browse our huge inventory of pre-owned cars and get $500 off our lowest website pricing. With your new Acura, you'll get free oil change for 2 years. And with every car sold to our military, we'll donate $100 to the Wounded Warrior Project to assist the soldiers who need it most. We'll have food trucks, fun, and a chance to win a new iPad 2 or a neighbor island sweetheart getaway to reunite a lucky couple. Military appreciation comes standard at Acura of Honolulu and Automart USA every day, not just 1 month out of the year. So don't wait. Stop by our easy-to-find locations today on Ala Moana Boulevard and get the special benefits you've earned.
Can't find a jeweler to repair your broken jewelry or replace missing stones, restring your pearls? Hi, this is Brenda Rutschel of Carats and Carats Fine Jewelry. We make miracles happen with your broken or damaged jewelry. We're a full-service jeweler. We repair gold, silver, and platinum jewelry. We even polish diamonds and gemstones. Bring us your jewelry to repair at our new location in the Ina Haina Shopping Center, Carats and Carats, 735-2301.
Aloha, Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy here. A breath of fresh air is what you need on your afternoon drive home, not the boring windbags. Can I say that? Tune in Monday through Friday. That's Hawaii's Tomorrow, 5 to 6 p.m., 760 KGU. Aloha.
Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy, presents Hawaii's Tomorrow, a series of discussions about Hawaii's business future, led by experts in their respective fields. Today's contributing host is the man himself, Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy.
Aloha. I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal, filling in for Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy, on this beautiful Wednesday, September 19th. Well, the whale season is upon us, and we have officially had humpback whales in our warm ocean waters. Each winter, we are treated to these visitors, who we see in the far-off distance from shore or close up by boat. Several hundred humpback whales assemble in Hawaii to mate and calve in our warm waters. Today, we are going to talk about these amazing animals with experts Dr. Lou Herman, Dr. Whitlow Au, and Dr. Adam Pack. They are here to discuss sound, mating choices, and humpback whale history here in Hawaii. So first up, we have with us Dr. Lou Herman. Dr. Herman pioneered humpback whale research in Hawaii beginning in the 1970s. He was the founder and director for the famous Kualo Basin Marine Mammal Laboratory, president and co-founder of Dolphin Institute, a nonprofit dedicated to research, education, and conservation of whales and dolphins, and professor at the University of Hawaii, Manoa. So basically, if it has to do with whales and dolphins in Hawaii, Dr. Herman has been involved. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
So to begin, can you tell us a little bit about humpback whales here in Hawaii? How do they differ from other populations elsewhere in the world?
Well, the North Pacific population has three winter breeding grounds. Hawaii is the major breeding grounds, and about 10,000 or so come here each winter to breed and calve. There are also breeding grounds in the North Atlantic and in the Southern Oceans.
So you just finished writing a bit about humpback whales, and you have written quite a lot. Some of your papers have looked at the long-term sightings of humpback whales and their life history here in the Hawaiian Islands. They have such a long history, and you've done such extensive studies. Can you tell us a little bit about these studies? What things or changes have you seen over time?
Well, the main change is the growth of the population that people have noticed. When I began my work in 1975, it was on a rumor that there were whales in these waters. Most people were unaware of them, and I flew out to Maui, chartered a helicopter, and lo and behold, did see some and began our studies the next year with boat and aerial surveys. That was 1976. And we began a photographic record as well, identifying the whales by the unique coloration on their tail flukes as they dive, and through the years we're able to trace these individuals and basically get an individual personal history of a lot of different whales.
So are you able to individually recognize whales over time here in Hawaii?
Absolutely, yes, and mostly it's through taking photographs and then going back to the lab and painstakingly examining the photographs to see if we've captured somebody that we've seen before in our growing and extensive catalogs.
And you've suggested something very interesting, which I don't think a lot of people have thought too much about, but you said that the humpback whales haven't been in Hawaiian waters for that extensive time period.
Yes, when I began my work, I wanted to know what was the experience of the pre-contact Hawaiians before Captain Cook arrived with the whales. And I went through the Hawaiian antiquities, the petroglyphs, the Hawaiian language, the rituals, and so forth, stories. And I could find basically no evidence that there was any recognition of the whales prior to about the beginning of the 19th century, the early 1800s. And my conclusion was that perhaps the whales, like everybody else, were recent visitors to these islands after Captain Cook.
Amazing. That's really interesting. And are you still doing work with humpback whales to this day?
Yes, we still have a project going, and we continue to collect photographs and to do work and to basically dig into the backlog of research that we've gathered over now 35 years and mine that and churn out papers describing the new findings on these whales.
And, you know, the population here is doing really well, but what about elsewhere in the world? Are they seeing a comeback as well?
In some places, the comeback is quite dramatic, like on the East Coast, in the North Atlantic, around Australia, on both the East and West Coasts. There's been a tremendous comeback. There's been a very nice comeback in the Mexican side of the Pacific as well as in Hawaii. But in the Western Pacific, on the Japan side, the whales are still fragile, and we're not sure about how whether that recovery is really succeeding. Those whales over there may be, even if the whales here are declassified, they may keep them in endangered status on the Japan side.
And is there a lot of work being done with that population as well?
Unfortunately, not a lot of work is being done with that population. The effort is not nearly as intensive as it was here in Hawaii or as it is on the East Coast, the North American coast.
Well, speaking of research here in Hawaii, I understand you're just finishing a paper right now that looks at humpback whale song and something they are quite famous for. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're writing about?
Well, this is sort of like a preview of coming attractions, I hope. But you know, when people first heard the humpback whale song, it was natural to compare it to bird song. You know, the males are the singers, and among the birds, the males are the singers as well. And the function of bird song is to attract females to the singer and to repel rival males. So both those theories were investigated with respect to the humpback whales. Neither theory has shown to be true or proven.
So what type of things do you look for in the song? Like, are you associating particular songs to particular whales, or how do you figure that out?
Mm-hmm. Well, what I believe is that, and I published a little bit on this, is that the whales are basically singing basically as a asynchronous confusion chorus, if you will, to attract females, but not to the individual singer, but to the arena where they're all aggregated. In animal behavior, it's called a lekking arena, L-E-K is the term. And what we've recently found out, we have developed the technique to size the whales using what we call underwater videogrammetry. And we found that the singers, unlike birds, in which only the adult males sing, that the immature humpbacks, males, sing as well. So they join in the chorus, and they create, in that way, a much larger acoustic space, which I think serves to attract more females than if the immatures were not joining in.
Sure, they want a piece of the action, too.
Well, they can't have the action because they're not mature yet, but they can learn, and they can observe, and maybe in later years they can have deferred benefits by taking what they've learned and what they've practiced up to a point to have better success when they are finally mature. And that takes, in the humpback male, it takes probably 8 to 12 years before he reaches that point. And that's just the beginning.
It's a lot of singing lessons. So if this song is taught, or if the juvenile male humpback whales learn this song, would they repeat the same song every year, or does it change from year to year?
Well, that's one of the well-established attributes of humpback whale song, is that it's It's changeable. It's mutable. And the song changes within a season and also across seasons. But at any point in time within a given area like Hawaii, all the whales that are singing the same current rendition.
So, are you familiar with the songs? Can you sing them?
It might be an old song.
Well, that's amazing. Thank you so much, Dr. Herman. We're going to take a quick traffic break, and we'll come back and talk a little bit more about humpback whales. I'd just like to acknowledge some sponsors, R&R Solar and Rolf Chris, Kona Red, the superfruit wellness beverage made with Hawaii's antioxidants-packed coffee fruits, Edible Hawaiian Islands, and Inter-Island Solar Supply and Kali Jud.
760 KGU.
Part of the Wall Street Business Network.
If you're going east, we're starting to see some slow traffic on the Kahala Viaduct, but really no big problems out to Hawaii Kai. The windward drive is normal. In Kailua, there was an accident at Ku'ule Road and Kalaheo. The really slow traffic is going west because of earlier problems. H1 slows at the airport exit on the viaduct. The Moanalua is slow right after Middle Street. And expect slow traffic around Wahiawa because of the bridge closure.
280,000 acres. That's the size of Molokai, Lanai, and Kahoolawe put together. It's also the amount of the prime farmable ag land designated in Hawaii. 280,000 acres. That's a lot of prime farmable ag land, and it needs to be preserved for agriculture. Aloha, I'm Dino Kimoto of Nalo Farms, and this fact is brought to you by Ho'opili, a new community where commercial farms, neighborhood, and home gardens will be part of the community's design. And there's so much more. Log on to www.ho'opilioahu.com.
Over the past century, more than 90% of koa forests in Hawaii have disappeared as tropical hardwood prices have skyrocketed. Hawaii's koa forests are an important part of our ecosystem and a symbol of our island heritage. Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Hawaii's Tomorrow need your help to repopulate 1,000 acres on the Big Island with new koa trees. For $60, you can sponsor your very own koa legacy tree on the slopes of Mauna Kea. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Along with a beautifully engraved personalized certificate, $20 will also be donated to the charity or organization of your choice. Gift a gift that grows grander year after year. And see how simple the act of planting a tree can change the face of the planet. To plant your Hawaiian Koa Legacy Tree, go to hawaiistomorrow.com and click on the Legacy Tree icon. Again, hawaiistomorrow.com. That's Hawaii's with an S, tomorrow.com.
Aloha, it's Jeff. Is it hotter in your home than out on your lanai? Do you wish there was an energy-efficient way to cool down? Wouldn't it be nice to turn on the trays at the flip of a switch? Well, my friends at Island Cooling have been quietly promoting the energy-efficient whole house fan for years. It works by drawing fresh air through your home, pushing the hot air out through your attic. Call the whole house fan experts at Island Cooling, 672-2300, 672-2300, or go to islandcooling.com. Aloha.
If you would like to join Jeff Davis and his guests on the air, call now at 296-5467. That's 296-5467. Now back to the Solar Guy.
You're listening to Hawaii's Tomorrow with Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal, filling in for Jeff Davis. With us now is Dr. Adam Pack, Associate Professor in Psychology and Biology at the University of Hilo. And because he is from the University of Hilo, we have Adam calling all the way over from Hawaii Island. Adam is also the Vice President of the Dolphin Institute and Chair of the Hawaiian Islands Humpback Whale National Marine Sanctuary Advisory Council. Adam, are you with us?
I am. Hi, Carly. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, thanks for calling in. I really appreciate it. So I noticed actually tomorrow you guys are having a Sanctuary Advisory Council meeting. Can you tell us a little bit about what they call the SAC and what your role is with it?
Sure. I'm happy to do that. And I just wanted to also say hi to my colleague, Lou Herman, and good friend and colleague, Whitlow Au, who I guess are there as well.
Yes. Hi, Adam.
Well, the Hawaiian Islands Humpback Whale National Marine Sanctuary was established in 1992 to protect humpback whales and their marine habitat. And the that management is a partnership between both the state of Hawaii and the federal government, NOAA. The Sanctuary Advisory Council was established in 1996, and it's comprised of pretty much volunteers that largely represent a broad spectrum of members of the public from the various counties and islands in the main Hawaiian Islands, areas such as research, education, conservation, Native Hawaiian representation, fishing, tourism, whale watching, business, and most recently a youth seat that we added. And the role of these folks, these volunteers, is to provide, based on their backgrounds and the best knowledge available, advice, guidance, and recommendations to sanctuary management to help them move forward with the sanctuary and ideas about the future of the sanctuary. We host regular meetings which are open to the public, like tomorrow, and there's also public comment periods so the public has an opportunity to voice their interests, concerns, opinions.
Wow, that's excellent. And so you get to be involved with that, but you also get to be involved with quite a bit of research, and you have an extensive history studying humpback whales alongside of Dr. Herman here. Now, you also have been working on some recent research with humpback whales in terms of male-female pairs and selection. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So one of our most recent papers that both Lou Herman and I have been working on has to do with dyads, or what we call pairs of whales. And this is one of the most common groupings that you find of whale groups in the Hawaiian Islands. Now, when you establish the sex of these the individuals in these pairs, you find that most are male-female, and that was the focus of this particular research study that we've been working on. And we asked the question whether body size matters in male-female pairings, how the males and females are pairing with each other. And so we used the same type of technique that Lou was talking about with the singers, called underwater videogrammetry, for sizing and measuring the body lengths of whales in pairs. In this case here, we measured about 134 individual whales and 67 male-female pairs. And interestingly, we found both mature-sized and immature-sized whales among these groups. When we took a closer look, we found an interesting correlation between whale size in the pairing. So larger males and females were pairing up with each other, and smaller males and females were pairing up with each other as well. When we did a more fine analysis, it became even more interesting. We found that mature-sized females associated nearly exclusively with mature-sized males, and among those, they preferred larger males. So mature-sized females like their males big. And in contrast, we found that mature-sized males were basically less choosy. They were less discriminating than the mature-sized females in their association. And we also found that the immatures, as you might predict, were associating with each other.
So how does size play into selection of mate versus the humpback whale song? Are those, would you say, equal in selection, or has there been any work comparing those factors?
Well, I think what we're beginning to do right now is start to piece together a rather interesting and complex puzzle in terms of the role of song in the humpback whale mating system, which Lou talked a little bit about, and then the role of body size in terms of these dyads. So humpback whales, males compete with each other physically for access to females in what we call competitive groups. And this is an opportunity for males to kind of show their stuff, fight with each other, for the females to perhaps do an assessment of the males. And in some of our earlier work, we found that the largest males tend to occupy the role of what we call principal escort, which is the male that is physically closest to that female and that coveted position which he is protecting fiercely against competitors. And within this current paper, we found that quite a number of these competitive groups often whittle down to a pair of whales, which turns out to be the female and typically whoever ended up as the last principal escort. And so for females, so there's a dynamic relationship between the competitive group and the dyad. And so why are females interested in these large males, but they've got a very high investment in their calves, right? So they're providing the gestation for the calves, all the nutrition for the calves. The males are basically acting as sperm donors, and or contributing that way. And so for the female, there's a large cost to mating, perhaps, with a very small male, less so for the males in terms of their mating habits. So this probably lends itself to females being very, very choosy in terms of who they associate with.
So the females kind of get to make the selection, and so and your research has shown that bigger is better with the humpback whales.
That's exactly right.
Excellent. And so you and Lou, I mean, you guys have been working together for a really long time. You guys must have seen so many amazing things over the past 25, 30 years that you've been doing research. Has anything stood out to you when you've been out in the field, or has there been one particular experience working with these whales that really stands out in your mind?
You know, there have been lots of experiences that Lou and I have had over the years with both our whale work and our dolphin work as well, and many studies that we've done. And I think that one of the most interesting studies that we collaborated on, actually with Lou's daughter, Aaliyah, as well as folks from National Geographic, was putting little cameras called Criticam on the backs of humpback whales temporarily through suction cup tagging. And the whales would take these cameras and then video beneath the surface all their behaviors and also the social activities, their involvement with other whales. And we wouldn't know what those videos revealed until we brought them back to our field house. And often it was very, very exciting. And we were seeing behavior that you would never see at the surface just snorkeling, because the whales were diving much deeper than we could see. And so to me, that stands out as a highlight in among the many things in terms of the whale research.
And Lou, would you agree with that, or do you have something else that stands out for you?
I would definitely agree with Adam. It was one of the most exciting adventures that we had. As a single personal encounter, what came to my mind was a time when I was in the water filming. It was early on. And I saw this mother and calf, mom and calf, swam up close to them, and lo and behold, the calf was actively nursing. You could see the some of the milk escaping as the calf suckled. And then somehow I felt like somebody was watching me, and I looked over my shoulder, and right behind me was the escort, the big male that was accompanying the mom and the calf. And you sort of look around, and you say, basically high, and he was fine with it. He watched, I watched, and eventually everybody swam off.
And you didn't get nervous at all?
Oh, yes.
I think I'd be a little nervous. Mm-hmm. And have you guys done work together on humpback whales elsewhere outside of Hawaii, in Alaska or other places?
Yes, both of us have been up to Alaska. I began working in Alaska in 1980, which turns out to be the principal feeding grounds for these whales that come to visit us here in Hawaii. And it's completely different up there. I mean, it is a feeding ground. The whales are not that interested in each other. They're interested in, you know, finding fish and feeding, and they generally are clustered together because that's where the fish are. And everything in Alaska, what struck me, everything is slow motion. And the whales, when they dive, it takes a long time for the tail to get under the water. And everything is just very, very slow. And it pointed out to me how really hectic things are here in Hawaii, where everything is pell-mell. Animals are racing after each other. In these competitive groups, it's like a free-for-all.
Well, we got all the humpback action in here in our waters. It's nice.
Absolutely.
So, Adam, before we move to traffic break, with humpback whale season nearly upon us, what advice do you have for the public that wants to be able to see some of these spectacular events or take a closer look at humpback whales?
Well, the Hawaiian Islands, as Lou alluded to, are the main wintering grounds for North Pacific humpback whales, and really one of the best places in the world, if not the best, for seeing humpbacks on their calving and breeding ground. And part of that is because often the humpbacks are hanging out in areas that are close to the coast in relatively calm waters and relatively clear waters. So there are many, many opportunities. You know, the humpback whale watching industry is thriving and has been thriving for a long time in Hawaii, and there are many opportunities off the various islands to view the whales, to view different types of groups like some of the ones we've been talking about. One of the best places is in what we call the Four Island region between Maui, Molokai, Lanai, and Kahoolawe. That is a relatively shallow area where it's hosts one of the highest concentrations of humpbacks. And there are various boats that leave out of Lahaina or Ma'alaya. But even if you're just driving down the highway in front of the West Maui Mountains, often you'll see traffic just come to a standstill because there are some whales, you know, 100 feet or so off of the shore just doing their thing, often a mother and calf or a competitive group swimming by, and it's very, very electric and exciting.
Well, we hope people get out there and get to see some of the humpback whales, keeping, obviously, a safe distance. Thank you so much, Autumn, for calling in today. We really appreciate it. We're going to go to a traffic break, but I want to recognize some of our sponsors here today: Natural Energy Laboratory, Honolulu Weekly, Sabrina's Restaurant, Hawaii Nanotech Glass Coating, Focused Energy, Hawaiian Legacy Hardwares, and Tom Moffitt Productions.
760 KGU,
part of the Wall Street Business Network.
Going west is slow today. Earlier problems have the Moanalua Freeway backed up to Middle Street and the H1 back to the airport exit on the viaduct. You'll be in heavy traffic until the Waimalu Pearl City exit. Up in Wahiawa, traffic heavy because of the Kamehameha Highway closure. Allow extra time in either direction. Also, watch for malfunctioning traffic lights at Kunia Road and Wilikina Drive. Traffic normal to the windward side and Hawaii Kai.
Want to go green for your home or business? Hawaii Community Reinvestment Corporation introduces its new Green Sun Hawaii program, an innovative public-private partnership to make energy improvements affordable for everyone. Green Sun Hawaii gives you the power to significantly reduce your utility bill. Visit Hawaii National Bank or other participating lenders or one of the many authorized energy contractors for more information. Or visit greensunhawaii.com and click on the easy-to-use loan application.
Aloha. This is the solar daughter, Lena Davis. My dad, the solar guy, Jeff Davis, has been telling me to listen to him my whole life. It's helped me, and I'm sure it'll help you too. Be sure to listen to My Dad, the Solar Guy, 5 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday on 760 KGU. Aloha.
Aloha, this is the solar guy, Jeff Davis. The solar industry has changed enormously in the last 3 years. So many companies have entered the market that one of the most asked questions I hear is, what makes your company different? Solar Services Hawaii has been serving Oahu and neighbor islands for more than 20 years. Solar Services was awarded the best inspection rate statewide from the Hot Water Rebate Program. We were number one. Solar Services is a local family company. We recognize the need for service with Aloha. I personally have given a class for the IRS. I've lectured many, including two luncheons with the National Association of Tax Preparers. Roof penetration and tax issues are my focus. For all solar products, meaning hot water, photovoltaic, pool and spa heating, solar pool pumps, solar attic fans, you name it. We specialize in photovoltaics and hot water, and of course a free estimate is available. Just call my phone, Jeff Davis the Solar Guy, at 554-7200. That's 554-7200. You have a great day and aloha.
This is Chief Louis Kealoha of the Honolulu Police Department. As part of the HPD's Safer Roads program, our officers are enforcing traffic laws 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. But we need your help. A few common sense choices can make a big difference. Stay within posted speed limits, use a hands-free cell phone device when driving, look out for pedestrians, and have a designated driver if you drink. Together, we can make Oahu's road safer and save lives. Aloha.
If you would like to join Jeff Davis and his guests on the air, call now at 296-5467. That's 296-5467. Now back to the Solar Guy.
You're listening to Hawaii's Tomorrow with Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy.
Welcome back. It's Carly, the Marine Science Gal, filling in for Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy. And if you are just joining us, we are talking about humpback whales today. I'm now going to be chatting with Dr. Whitlow Au, Chief Scientist for the Marine Mammal Research Program at the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology, University of Hawaii. Wait, you have an extensive background in all marine mammals and specific interests in sound or acoustics. What got you interested in humpback whale sound?
Well, humpback whales are very interesting in the sense that the males sing almost all the time. They sing 24/7, and you can, with acoustics, you can observe the singing, the characteristics of the singing during the day and during the night, and so it's really a really excellent subject to study.
And do you look at other marine mammals or just humpback whales?
I do all types of marine mammals, dolphins. I specialize in biosonar, that is the dolphins that emit sounds to find their prey and to locate their prey and to capture their prey.
Excellent. Well, I know you have some sounds for us today to listen to, so we'll get to those in just a second. I have Jeff Davis calling in all the way, I think, from outside of the United States. Jeff, are you there?
Aloha, Carly. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I tell you what, it's a great day for me to be calling you because I'm at the conference for the Maritime and Reef Health in the Philippines. And I've been down here for the last 2 weeks. 3 days ago I was diving with four whale sharks up close and personal. And I've been doing moon reef surveys. And it has just been a fantastic experience. Carly, let me ask you something. Did you know that corals have individual personalities?
Individual personalities? Do you mean individual coral polyps or the entire colony?
No. They're like pets. They're always different.
They're always different. How are the corals there?
People don't realize, they think corals as like inanimate objects, you know? And even when they realize they're alive, they think of them more as like a stone with a, you know, that reproduces itself. But no, these things have minds. And some of these soft corals are actually, like I said, they're like pets. They react to human stimulus or other types of stimulus, very aware. It's amazing, Carly, to see. It's like going to church when you're down there, and I know I'm preaching to the choir, no pun intended, because it's the same feeling, I'm sure, when you're up north. And the Papa and the Papa, it's not that hard, but up north in the Northwest Archipelago, a wonderful marine sanctuary. So these folks here in the Philippines, for instance, we're at a marine conference. They are way ahead of our game in the sense that you're not allowed to spearfish, for instance, with scuba gear over there because they're so interested in maintaining the health of the reef for tourism purposes, let alone for the locals to be able to have a subsistence living. The whale sharks is just amazing. Now, they were literally swimming with these whale sharks 2 days ago. They're rubbing up against me. These sharks are approximately 30 feet long. And there's four or five of them, as many as 10 of them. They all congregate in one area, and you're allowed to go into the water and interact with these things. You know, you're not supposed to touch them, but they do touch you. Oh my God, it's amazing. And I'm really interested in seeing when I come back. I'm going to be talking to you, and I want to see what we can do with some legislation to stop this overfishing of our reefs nearby, our nearby coastal waters, and let's see if we can't bring our fish populations back up. What do you say to that?
Well, I'm all for education and conservation. I'm so happy you're having a great experience there on the reefs.
Yeah, well, they're flying us all to Boracay today, poor me. So I'll be down there. And again, this is all about the health of the reef and the policies that keep these reefs healthy. Obviously, these ecosystems are so magnificently intertwined. It's just unbelievable what I'm looking at. When I'm down there looking at these reefs and the systems, that they're all just one big organism, it's literally as you're in church. You really feel the greatness of God when you're down there looking at the intricacies, and it's like another alien planet. And I can really understand that your compatriots and all the people that you've brought into my show previously, how their passion for this is so great. Once you're in the presence of God in that form, this is something that it changes your life. Would you agree?
I can't agree with you more. The ocean is definitely a place where I think is just the most amazing thing, and especially marine mammals. I mean, the humpback whales that we're talking about today, if you've ever seen them or experienced them in the water, they really are quite incredible. And I'm so lucky. I don't know if you've been listening to the show. We've got some great researchers and world-famous experts on humpback whales here today telling us about them.
All right, you guys, thank you so much for helping to educate. And like I said, you can start cooking this over in your brain, Carly. We're going to get some legislation put up in front of the legislature this year and try and get some real hard education done on the aspects of following the quote-unquote third world and the more sustainable day-to-day life they have for their reef systems, for everybody concerned. It's a beautiful thing. Thanks again. I'll be looking forward to talking to you when I get back, and aloha.
Aloha. I'm glad you're so pumped, Jeff. It's good to be excited about the ocean. So going from coral reefs to humpback whales, I know you brought some sounds in for us today. Can you tell us a little bit about how you collect the humpback whale sound or how you obtain that?
Well, very simply, you put an underwater microphone and you just turn on a tape recorder and you hear these songs that are sung by males, and they're very interesting and very distinctive. And I'm not going to imitate any of them, so.
Oh, come on. Any of you guys want to take a stab at the imitation? Oh, that's pretty good. That's pretty accurate. Let's have a listen and see how accurate that is. Can we roll the humpback whale sound? I guess all that experience with humpback whales paid off, because that was pretty spot on.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, you might be able to attract a couple female humpbacks with that call, Lou.
That would be nice.
Yeah, that would be. Do you notice any differences between the sounds, the humpback whale sounds, in the main Hawaiian Islands versus the northwestern Hawaiian Islands?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. We had some ecological acoustic recorders that Dr. Mark Lammers and I developed, and we had some of them up in the Northwest Hawaiian Islands, and we had a grad student analyze the sound that these recorders were picking up, along with the sounds that the recorders were picking up in the main Hawaiian Islands, and we looked at the individual units, these are pulses of sounds, and developed the statistics on these units, and we find that they're different to some degree. There's some units that are used much more, say, in the Northwest Hawaiian Island than the main Hawaiian Islands, and some much less. And so we're coming to the conclusion that there might be a different population that migrate directly from the Aleutian area to the Northwest Hawaiian Islands, and another population migrating directly to the main Hawaiian Islands. That's kind of like our position at this particular time. And we just need to collect more data to be able to get a better handle on this.
So, I mean, that seems like it'd be a pretty big deal if you guys could prove that there are different populations. What kind of implications would that have for our knowledge?
Well, it just gives us a better understanding of the general movement of these whales. As Dr. Herman said, that up in the Aleutian areas, they migrate to Japan and to Mexico and to the main Hawaiian Islands. And there might be another location, not the main Hawaiian Islands, but perhaps the Northwest Hawaiian Island as another terminal point for the wintering grounds. And that would be important in terms of the general understanding of what these whales do.
And so do you have more research planned for the next year or so?
Well, we just saw Dr. Lammers and his people just deployed, I think, 3 or 4 more years up in the Northwest Hawaiian Island. It's difficult to do research in the Northwest Hawaiian Island because you can't go there just on any basis except on scheduled NOAA cruises, and those cruises might go maybe once every 6 months or so. So you have to make use of the opportunity, and so Dr. Lammers deployed 4 years, as I said, just recently, just last month. And hopefully it will last long enough to go into the humpback whale season.
Well, we hope so. And so working with sound, do you also work with acoustic tags? What kind of things do you look at in terms of humpback whale sound besides just identifying what population makes what sound?
Well, that's a really interesting question. One of my former students, Dr. Allison Stimpert, put some acoustic tags on humpback whales in the Stellwagen banks and recorded click-like sounds that sound like dolphins would use in their biosonar. And the pattern of the sounds, the repetition rate, seemed to be very similar to an animal approaching a target. And in that tag, you also had an accelerometer so you could tell the position of the animal and how the animal turned, how it dipped its head, etc. And it looked like very similar to what you would expect a dolphin foraging behavior would be. Except I don't call it echolocation. I call it more echo-sounding because they probably are trying to find large objects like the bottom of the ocean, because they forage at night, and if you're 180 feet below the water at night, everything's dark, and if you're swimming at a good clip, and if you don't know where the bottom is, you might have some interaction with the bottom, which might not be very pleasurable. Or if you're looking for a school of herring, for instance, a big, large school, you can get some information about where it might be in terms of distance away from you, and some general broad location. And so, again, things are being done at night, so the more information you can gather from whatever sources, the better the whale will be able to do its job.
Excellent. Well, let's come back to that in just a minute. We have to take a quick traffic break, but we'll be back in just a minute. I'd like to acknowledge UH Federal Credit Union, the Manila Hotel, Lumen Solar LLC, D.R. Horton Schuler Homes, Solar Services Hawaii, Blue Planet Foundation, and Young Brothers.
760 KGU,
part of the Wall Street Business Network.
There's a new accident reported in town. It's at Ward Avenue and Waimanu Street. That's just a block south of Kapi'olani. It's been slow this afternoon going west. The H1 is backed up to the overpasses on the viaduct. The Moanalua slows just after Middle Street. Inbound traffic from the west slows at Ola Lane. Inbound traffic from the east slows at the McCulley overpass. And we're looking pretty good going out to Hawaii Kai as well as over to the windward side.
If you would like to contact Jeff either about the program or have any other questions about solar photovoltaics or hot water, call 554-7200. That's 554-7200.
Aloha. It's your solar guy, Jeff Davis, with a sure bet for you and your family. If you or someone you know believes they are living in a neighborhood that has no room on the grid to install more photovoltaics to erase your electricity bill, I can do it. I will guarantee to get your home approved by HECO, or I'll give you $100. Again, if you need PV on your home and you're under the impression that your neighborhood or your grid is full to saturation, I, Jeff Davis, the solar guy, can get your home installed and connected to HECO's net metering program, or I'll give you $100 call-up bill. You just call me, the solar guy, Jeff Davis, at 554-7200, 554-7200. Aloha.
If you would like to join Jeff Davis and his guests on the air, call now at 296-5467. That's 296-5467. Now back to the solar guy.
You're listening to Hawaii's Tomorrow with Jeff Davis, the solar guy.
So in that little break there, we were just chatting about humpback whales, and I was surprised to hear that both Dr. Herman and Dr. Au have spotted whales or had evidence of humpback whales here in Hawaii prior to the fall. Can you guys share a little bit about that?
Well, with our ears, we have been able to detect humpback whales as late as maybe the first or second week in June. And it's very interesting, just talking to Dr. Herman, that he was able to see some humpback whales that late in the season.
Yes. generally, the last animals to be here are the moms with the calf and some adult males. But we have seen them as late as early June. Very unusual, rare, but they are here. They're the remnants of the winter grouping, winter population.
And Adam, are you still on the line? Do we still have Adam with us? Hi, Adam. You still hanging on?
I'm still hanging on.
And what about you? Have you seen any humpbacks prior to the fall?
Prior to the fall, well, personally, I did not see the whale that was sighted by and confirmed by several research boats this a couple of weeks ago off the the Kona coast, but there was an image of it. It was clearly a humpback on the local paper, and that seemed quite early. Typically, you hear some boats spotting the first whales in maybe in October, and this was much earlier. So it was interesting.
So is this just one particular incident where a humpback whale is just, you know, really eager to get out to the warm waters, or why do you think that we spotted, or why that whale would be here so early?
I'm not sure, and that's why I think it's interesting to see whether there are other humpbacks that are going to be here early. Typically, you know, you may have an occasional sighting of a whale very early or very late, as Lou and Witt are talking about it. It's not something to be concerned about yet, but it's certainly something of interest in to keep watching for.
Do you guys have any other theories on that?
Well, I think plovers have been spotted this year earlier than usual in Hawaii, and the plovers migrate from Hawaii to Alaska and back. They migrate from Alaska to Hawaii during the winter. And it seems a little bit early, and I wonder if there's a correlation between whatever's happening to them and what's happening to, say, the humpback whale.
Right. Climate change is what you're hinting at, I guess. But, you know, one of the theories that I put forth about if the whales weren't here until about 200 or so years ago, what brought them here? And about 200 years ago was the end of the mini ice age, the little ice age, as it's called, when there were vast recessions of the glaciers, and which would cause changes in some of the oceanographic variables, what we call water masses, for example, that, areas of constant salinity and temperature that migrate, actually, as a mass. And that might have been a stimulus causing them to seek a different area. It's hypothetical.
And is this something that is new, or have there been trends of earlier humpback whales? I mean, both you and Adam have been studying humpback whales for quite a long time here.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's this early is unusual. I think this is the earliest anybody has seen them. You know, we don't know whether this was definitely an outlier. When I saw the photo of the whale, which is very little information to go on, but to me it looked like a young animal because its rostrum or beak was much shorter than a full-grown adult, at least it appeared to be on the photograph. And as the calf matures to a juvenile and then to an adult, there's a lengthening of the rostrum, as we call it, the jaw, which is to accommodate feeding. But it's pretty blunt at the beginning, and as far as I could tell from that photo, this one could have been a yearling or somewhere around that age.
I would. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I would just add to that that often there's a misconception among the public that the whales are either all here or not all here. And it's been known for a long time that they typically migrate in what we call a migratory parade, which is conditioned by their several variables, including their sex, their age class, and their reproductive state. So early on, you see females with yearlings coming down, as well as what Lou's mentioning, the juvenile whales, and then the what's called the resting females, who are neither lactating nor pregnant at that or ovulating at that time. The mature males, and the last to come down are the females that got pregnant the year before and are now ready to give birth. And that trend tends to reverse itself on the migration out from the island. So females who have gotten pregnant are typically some of the first to leave, whereas, as Lou said, the males and the new mothers are staying down as long as they can.
So if I, in an imaginary world, waved my magic grant wand and said you could have unlimited funds to do something with humpback whales, what kind of work or study would you like to do?
Well, first thing, I would examine your brain. But, yes, the research is terribly underfunded. That's for sure. And most of us have done research, you know, are scrimping, finding various ways to fund the research through volunteers or whatever. What we need is, you know, larger boats. We need help in terms of logistics, being able to get to places that we can't get to normally. Like, for example, here in the islands, Penguin Bank is a very densely populated area, but it's out in the boondocks. It's out in the middle of the Kalohe Channel there. Not the Kalohe Channel, the channel between Maui and between Molokai and Oahu, and Ka'iwi Channel. And so there would be all kinds of possibilities to open new grounds and to investigate things that we haven't been able to do before. And I'd like to return to doing some camera work as well.
I would really like to do studies on the calf-calf pair communications using acoustic tags on the calf and on the mother, and study what kind of communications that take place and how far apart do they usually go, and how the different animals respond to various kinds of sounds in their communication pattern.
How about you, Adam?
Well, I would like to, with your magic wand, I would like to focus some effort on trying to get a better handle on mate choice in terms of determining which females in which groups are pregnant and where those females end up. Typically, if we see a female without a calf, it's usually a lone sighting. We don't see that female again, perhaps until the next year, maybe up on the feeding ground, which implies that something's happened, you know, and perhaps she's gotten pregnant. It would be nice to be able to confirm that. And then with the second magic wand, I would love to see if we could fund some research to get up to those northwestern Hawaiian Islands to actually photograph the identities by taking pictures of the undersides of the tail flukes of the individual whales that Witt and Mark Lammers have been hearing, to really try and match them up against our catalog to see, in fact, do they represent a unique group, or are some of the whales migrating between, or where are they coming from? And one of the things that Lou and I have been doing over the years is, along with all of the students that have come through this lab, is building up a 30-plus year history of individual whales, and so it's a rich archive to be able to do these comparisons to.
Well, maybe one day my magic wand will grant all your wishes. But until then, actually, speaking of wishes, I wanted to give a shout-out. It's my dad's birthday today, 61st birthday, and he's the one who really got me interested in the beach and the ocean, so happy birthday, Dad. Today we've heard from Dr. Herman, Dr. Pack, and Dr. Au. For all of you that are listening and interested in learning more about humpback whales, you can visit the Hawaiian Islands Humpback Whale National Marine Sanctuary. I'd like to acknowledge Hawaii's COSI program, Island Earth, which aims to connect marine science issues to both visitor and local communities with special emphasis on integration of Western and traditional knowledge. Again, a big thank you to all our guests who took time out of their busy schedules to speak with us today.